Welcome back to Cinema Vino. We're going live to tape again because we're feeling adventurous. We like working without a net. Tonight, we're going to drink a little red wine. We're going to talk about Hellboy 2, The Golden Army.
Yeah.
Part of our series talking about long-lost summer blockbuster sequels. And that's a movie that, for a lot of reasons we'll talk about, hadn't quite gotten its due. Good movie.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed it again on this go-around.
Guillermo del Toro.
Exactly. Great director, great cast, perfectly suited for the roles that they play. So, a little backstory about this. First of all, we're talking about the wine that we're drinking. We're drinking the Tate Ballbuster.
Tatey.
So, basically, I thought the Ballbuster seemed appropriate for Hellboy because he's kind of a ballbuster of a character. And it's a big, it's got some heat to it for a red wine. So, I thought, well, it's got some heat, so it fits him and his main squeeze in the story. They both kind of are fire appropriate. But yeah, 77% Shiraz, 15% Cab, 8% Merlot. And I'll post a link to this on cinemavino.net where you can learn more about this. But yeah, this is from the Barossa Valley in Australia. So it's a big, burly red wine. Yeah. So very appropriate to Hellboy, I think.
It's got some stank.
Yeah.
It's making my nipples hot.
It is 15.9% alcohol, which is very, very high
for those Aussies. Those Aussies love it.
Yeah. It's almost to fortified, like port and sherry levels.
Yeah.
Those are usually around 18%. Most red wine is somewhere between 12.5% and 14%. So almost everything you drink will be somewhere in that range. White wine is usually 12.5%, sometimes less.
Yep.
So this is a very hearty, very strong red wine. So might overwhelm food, but still, it's a good standalone wine. It definitely goes with, you know, a brawny character in a big old burly movie.
Oh, yeah.
So
just the name makes me giggle. Ballbuster.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Tate.
Yeah. Tate the Ballbuster.
Missing an N.
Tatin.
That's it.
So talking about Hellboy 2.
Hey. The Golden Army.
Mm-hmm. And so basically everything we say from this point is going to assume that you've seen Hellboy 1 and Hellboy 2, not the 2019 reboot with David Harbour, which was just absolute doo-doo pie.
I never saw it. I don't plan to.
It was rough.
Yeah.
It was rough. Saw it in the theater. And yeah.
I waited and saw it on HBO Max and it just, yeah. It didn't really do it for me. I'm glad I didn't pay money in theater.
I wanted to bash myself in the face with a cricket bat. It was that bad.
I mean, on paper.
I didn't see it.
Mila Jovovich and David Harbour, I'm like, oh, sounds great. But, like, Perlman is my Hellboy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he.
Hashtag not my Hellboy.
I know.
And it's like, I mean, I'm not saying nobody could ever play him other than Ron Perlman, but he definitely is the best and definitive so far playing Hellboy. He's perfect. You couldn't build a better one to play him.
Yeah. So basically he was, you know, Hellboy is Michael Keaton. And then, so Val Kilmer was...
David Harbour is like...
George Clooney?
George Clooney's brother who's never acted before.
Oh, Bob Clooney.
Did Hellboy have nipples in the 2019 remake?
I don't remember. Hmm. I think so. I don't remember.
Huh.
I don't know.
Huh.
I spend a lot of time counting the popcorn in my tub, so...
The makeup wasn't as great on there. No. Like, it was, I mean, it was definitely a reboot. And then, I mean, okay, let's get this out of the way. Guillermo del Toro really likes practical effects, and that's what I fucking love about him. And they had the Hellboy makeup and costume and, like, down to a science in Hellboy 2.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't look, you know, as bulky, and he could, you know, move much better.
It looked more natural.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Faux show.
So... Basically, Hellboy 2 takes up a little bit after Hellboy 1 and kind of, I mean, really does a good job of just picking up the storyline, I think, where the first one left off. So it really touches on, but it has a whole self-contained, like, separate story from the first one. But with, like, Hellboy's relationship with Liz, played by Selma Blair, really does a good job of taking that further. Develops the character of Abe and his, you know, burgeoning humanity, I would say. And basically, they fight a new, like, supervillain, this time a big villain, in this mystical elfland kingdom, which I thought was very Tolkien-esque.
Yeah.
You know, the backstory, the opening narration by John Hurt is all very Tolkien-esque. And basically, it's like a war between the impending war between the humans and this elfland fantastical kingdom for this, you know, crown. Basically, this MacGuffin or... Horcrux or whatever you want to call it, where it's like basically all the power stored in this thing and it has to be put back together and yada yada.
like Humpty Dumpty.
Yeah. And it's
just like Humpty Dumpty.
Yes. And it's basically the same idea as the One Ring, where it's like it was eventually like the power was entrusted to different like men and, you know, other creatures. And
yeah, two for the elves, one for the men.
Mm-hmm. And so it's just a matter of time before that power gets abused. In the Lord of the Rings, it's the men who are corrupt. And this one, it's the Elfland prince who's corrupt. Basically, he wants to reassemble the crown and reactivate the, is it, I mean, they'd be like mechanical golems, I would say.
Yep, golem army.
Yeah, and just take over the world. And so, you know, Hellboy's crime-fighting team, which is, to me, a combination of Ghostbusters and Men in Black, kind of incorporates elements of both. Has to, you know, reach out and stop this, you know, burgeoning doom or whatever.
The BRPD.
Yes. I was trying to think of the acronym.
Bureau
of Paranormal Research
and Defense.
Yeah.
BPRD.
Mm-hmm. And so they have to step in and fight this kind of apocalyptic threat to everybody.
It's always a threat to humanity.
Mm-hmm. And so the main villain is Prince Nuada, and his identical twin becomes a love interest for Abe Sapien, and so they have like a weird twin relationship in the movie that basically what affects one of them affects the other. And so it's an interesting villain. It's a twist on the first movie from, was it Rasputin in the first movie?
Yeah.
Who was the villain? Yeah. But it also touches on the same idea that Hellboy is like this, you know, meant to bring in doom for humanity. And
hey, he's the son of the devil. He's the Antichrist or something. Yeah.
And so, basically, it touches on some of the same themes of the first one without, you know, really repeating the first one. So it does a good job of developing new stuff, but still, you know, fleshing out the characters that we really liked in the first film. So we'll go around the horn, Sean. Welcome back.
Hey.
What were your thoughts watching it? And had you seen, I'm sure you've seen it before.
Yeah, I had seen it before. Yeah, I really liked it. Getting to revisit it now, you know, 13 years after it came out, I am really disappointed that we never got a third one because they laid a lot of really good groundwork for a trilogy out of this.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, this came out in 2008 where a whole lot of other comic book blockbusters came out the same year. And this got absolutely fucking sandbagged.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. This is a busy year.
Super busy year. And I know Guillermo del Toro has tried to, you know, get the band back together a few times. There was a whole petition on Twitter to release or do Hellboy 3. And basically he came out in like 2017, I think, and was like, listen, guys, sorry, it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, but they did a really good job of being a second movie. They didn't waste any time at the beginning trying to develop the characters more. You know, we had the backstories. We knew everyone who they were. And it was just like, boom, we're getting to the action. Here's Prince Nuada. I wish they had given him more of like a motivation. They just kind of said like, oh, yeah, he's just kind of mad that we, you know, didn't keep fighting the first time. And for some reason, millions of years later or whatever, he's still pissy about it. So, you know, he comes in and he has like cool action sequences and he's, you know, doing everything. But I love how Guillermo del Toro does both practical effects and monsters.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the monster design is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, this was around the same time. I don't know what year Pan's Labyrinth came out.
2006, I think.
It was like, something like 06.
But this 05, just
like, it drenched of like the Guillermo del Toro Pan's Labyrinth, mm-hmm. like the eyes on the hands.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The death sequence where Death is like reviving Hellboy, spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was incredible. Apparently that costume was so heavy that the actor couldn't actually walk around. He had to be like picked up on like guide wires, which is why he kind of glides instead of walks.
Mm-hmm. I think that's Doug Jones again.
Yeah. And I think he also played the character that sort of like introduced Nuada into the King's Chamber in the beginning.
Yeah.
Not the...
No.
No.
Oh.
No, yeah, I don't remember. It's like the Chancellor like it's or tradition. Something.
You have to give your sword up. Or
you
whatever.
Have to give your sword up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I like
he,
that
one. Yeah. I, yeah. But yeah, it's, I love Guillermo del Toro. Anything he does is just magical. Mm-hmm. He does such a good world building and they gave him like a good budget for it too. And he put all of it to good use.
Yeah.
It's a real shame that this didn't get a bigger box office break.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, like you said, that third movie.
Yeah.
You know,
but I think it, it came at the wrong time because it was such a fantastical, like, magical, you know, Hellboy was something special where it wasn't like that gritty Heath Ledger, you know, Batman realistic environment, that realistic tone, that dark, gritty Batman that really came out and really set the tone for the next decade of superhero movies.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Iron Man followed a lot of the same premise, but it was like that first Batman, everyone was like, oh, that's pretty good. Yeah. Then when Dark Knight happened, Heath Ledger obviously was a huge pull. It just totally sandbagged the mystical part of Hellboy. And I think it wasn't until Doctor Strange of the MCU when we kind of like got that vibe back into movies.
Yeah.
So it was 2008?
Yep.
Yeah. Is that, and that's when Dark Knight came out?
Yeah.
Also?
A week later.
A week later.
Yeah, let's rattle off some of the other movies that came out around then. So it was Dark Knight, and then it was Iron Man.
Yeah,
Iron Man. And this was the Incredible Hulk with Ed Norton.
Ed Norton.
Uh-huh.
Crystal Skull.
A few comedies were out at that time. You know, you go into the winter time. I was, you know, there was a bomb film, Quantum of Solace. Yeah, there a couple of Will Ferrell comedies, which he was really big at the time.
Hey, he was peaking in 2000.
Yeah, yeah, it was like, but you know, and going off what Sean said, Hellboy 1, I think, was such a phenomenal film, and I didn't know anything about it. I'd never seen it in theaters, and I was like, wow, what the hell is it? Not knowing anything, just going there blind. I was like, damn! Not only it was just so well done, the storyline was so great, the comedic values in there was just great, and you know, we kind of were talking about it with like Batman and Batman Returns is in the second film, of Batman, we didn't even see Michael Keaton for the first 30 minutes. Like, no, because you've kind of lost it. Like, you've already seen the Batman. Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of like with Hellboy. We were all built up to see Hellboy, you know, we're so excited. Well, we've already seen him, but they didn't fuck around. They were like, boom, here we're starting this film and this is what we're going to go.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it didn't even give you time to really, you know, think about anything. You just kind of went into it like, oh man, we got a brand new situation going on.
Good storytelling.
Yeah, good storytelling. Yeah. And
good weather.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And I think that's I saw it previously, but I wasn't really, I was said this before the podcast, I wasn't really paying attention to it. When this was years ago, I was just watching it and I was like, oh yeah, Hellboy 2. It might have even been on TV. I was like, I need to watch this because I love the first one. And I was watching it and I was like, man, this is pretty cool. But, you know, dicking around, commercial break, I'm in there making, you know, Cinnamon Toast Crunch and I'm just coming back, watching, just not really paying attention. And then watching it again, and I was like, damn, this is really good. And then I read your review and I kind of was like, man, he is 100% right. It was like, it hasn't gotten its due. But I did look at like, I mean, it made like 160, 180 million. I mean,
decent gross. Yeah.
I'm more shocked after I was looked at that. I was like, damn, it did pretty good for costing 80 million for the competition it had.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we say,
yeah, it wasn't a flop.
No, not. And I mean, a lot of critics loved it, but it was just like, I think it just got lost in that. Like you said,
it came at a weird turning point in movies where it was moving toward, like comic book movies.
Yeah.
But like the gritty, you know, realistic comic book movies.
It was almost like, was it, and is it not the case in my opinion, but I could see people being like, oh, this is too
out there.
Yeah, too costume effect, too much, which I loved it.
Too fantastic.
It's too much, you know. Yeah. And I think another thing that came out at the same time was one of the Chronicles of Narnias, you know, which is like, and I think that was the one that did flop bad.
Yeah.
I don't think they made any more after that. But like, it was just very interesting. But like, that film, Hellboy 2, I mean, definitely is a great, like, number two.
Yes.
And it is. It's kind of sad. Never saw 2019, but I mean, I feel Ron Perlman, like you can't compete with that guy.
No,
it's like, and they tried with a few of the Batmans, you know, like in that time frame, and it's like, yeah, there's just no even reason to try to make another one.
Well,
yeah.
And Ron Perlman passed up a lot of other movies for this movie,
yeah,
because he was really dedicated to Hellboy.
Yeah.
Like he felt the character a lot, and I think, you know, putting himself into that role, I'm really surprised he never came back for a third, but something must have happened where, you know, either the timing wasn't off or he was feeling it or, you know, something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the Sons of Anarchy timeline very well, but
it was right after that.
Okay. It's like,
One thing I'm going to throw out there real quick is the next movie we're going to review is Ghostbusters 2.
Yeah.
That actually suffered some of the same exact problem. Not that it's a great movie by any means. I mean, it's a fun movie that, you know, I certainly enjoyed when I was a kid. But it suffered, its box office suffered greatly because it was released roughly the same time as Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade and Batman.
Goddamn Indiana Jones.
And it drained. And Batman. It really impacted its box office, which is one reason why it took so long to get a third movie together.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously Bill Murray isn't real enthused about it, but that also, the studio was not real enthusiastic about it either.
Yeah. Well, one thing I can tell you on is I love Guillermo del Toro, but he has some shitty follow through. Like, he's been attached to so many films, and I'm sure I've said it on
the podcast. He's like the George R. R. Martin of movies.
Exactly. He was supposed to do, I think, The Fountain, and then he dropped out. He was going to do
that Brad Pitt movie when he grew his hair out.
Yeah, he was going to do At the Mountains of Madness. Was that a Lovecraft? I think it was one of the Lovecraft stories that he was going to do. But then there was, you guys talking about it made me look it up. The first Hellboy was made for around 60 to 66 million and made almost 99 million.
Wow, that was it?
The second one, they bumped it up an extra 20 million. It was in between 82 to 85 million and it made 168.3.
Yeah.
So the second one made him even more buku bucks. Which I think is telling because everybody really liked the first Hellboy so much. They were like,
first one.
Fuck yeah. And you have Seth MacFarlane coming in. Is that Johan Krauss?
Yeah.
Who just added, he's in the BRPD comics because they have Hellboy comics and then they had an offshoot that was more just the BRPD and other crazy, you know, let Abe Sapien shine a little bit more. And basically. I mean, they had the fans for another Hellboy 3. And I think Guillermo del Toro just stretched himself too thin because he got so many offers he loves everything. He's a nerd for fucking everything, and I love that about him.
Yeah.
But he starts to commit to too many things that he can't do.
Right.
Like he was supposed to do the Hobbit trilogy. And started on it, did at least a year of pre-production before he was like, yeah, fuck, I can't do anything. So they used most of his like designs and stuff. And then PJ, old Peter Jackson, came back in and ended up doing the whole thing himself.
It's probably why he has so many like executive producer credits.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
One was, At the Mountains of Madness, I think was a Lovecraft, H.P. Lovecraft story, I believe. But yeah, he gets attached to do so many things. And then he also did, I think he directed maybe the first episode, but he did the some vampire show on FX, like the Strain. It was a series of books.
Yeah. I vaguely remember that.
Yeah. I thought he also did another like an episode of something recently. Was it on Netflix?
No, he was also I think he was attached to a TV series, The Mist, maybe.
Also a Stephen King book, I
think. Yeah.
Yeah.
That I'm not entirely sure of, but man, his love of practical effects is a delight, and he then gets to save whatever money he's got for when he does do CGI, like he did the giant plant elemental thing on there that was great, especially for that time.
The tooth fairies,
awesome.
The tooth fairies, he dips into like the fucked up Grimm's fairy tale stories.
Yeah.
The tooth fairies eat fucking teeth.
Yeah, he tapped into a lot of Irish mythology for this.
Sure. A lot of dark stuff, and like you say, those effects hold up great now.
Yeah,
for real.
Yeah, you look at stuff like, I mean, honestly, we did Sky Captain the World of Tomorrow, and that, it's like, man, for the time, for 2004, that was great. You look at it now, it's like, it looks a little bit video gamey. It looks a little bit cut to me, like cut scenes.
Yep.
But yeah, you look at Hellboy, that could have come out this summer, and it's like, this looks great. That's true. This could be on HBO Max right now, and it looks phenomenal.
But some of the Sky Captain was pioneering in that area. But yeah, it's definitely, when you look back at it, you can tell.
Yeah.
But the other great thing was they had David Hyde Pierce did the voice of Abe Sapien in the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And the next one, they just got Doug Jones, the actor in the suit, to do it. And I fucking love Doug Jones.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Star Trek Discovery now, and he's been, like, you know him from, in Hocus Pocus, he was the zombie. You've seen him, like, 1,000 times before and never knew he was in there. He's
a
fucking phenomenal actor. And the Barry Manilow scene, which you wrote about in your review, it was one of my hands-down favorite scenes in the whole thing.
Yeah.
Just getting drunk, talking about women, seeing a little Barry Manilow, it like honestly really humanized the characters. I was like, yeah, that's fucking hilarious.
Can I just say, I think they did something really innovative with storytelling that kind of got picked up by Marvel in the Infinity War and Endgame. Is the first time that Hulk fights Thanos, he gets his ass kicked, right? And so it kind of precludes you for later on when he has to fight him in the future. So Hellboy fought Nuada drunk and lost. He got his ass kicked. Mm-hmm. But they were able to like work it into the plot that he was drunk because of this, blah, blah, blah. Later on, he has to challenge him for the crown sober, and he wins. I think that's incredible storytelling. Yeah. Is that you know they were able to like show him, you know, redeeming himself or, you know, coming back and kind of surmounting the odds.
Well, they also show their fight styles, and it's rare that you have like a main villain is usually like super powerful or it can gesture and boom, things happen. But to have like a super quick and agile like villain when it's like the main guy who's a big like Rocky style thing, I thought was interesting too. Yeah. And that's that guy Luke Goss was the villain in Blade 2 that Guillermo del Toro did. He was Nomak in that, and he's what, Nuada in this one?
It's not a far cry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, what were you going to say?
No, I'm just saying like, yeah, the humanizing was a great point. It was like, I didn't really think of that, but it was like, man, he really does. It's like, especially on Hellboy, does kind of, for what he is, kind of humanizes him. Yeah,
he likes pancakes. He likes little kitties. Yeah. He likes Barry Manilow.
Kittens. Cigars.
Yeah. Kittens.
Uh-huh. Likes cigars.
Likes kittens, not kitties.
Yeah.
not little kitties.
And it does something.
Kittens. Likes kittens.
Sorry. It's a very we're different
live.
Movie.
We're live.
It's like, it does something great in there where it shows like, that series has an ability to not take itself seriously with the Barry Manilow thing too. It's like, we're not going to get too heavily dramatic and all this, and it's still fun and humorous and all that. And that fight scene you're talking about, I love that because it was multi-level, like, you know, all those like kind of revolving turrets and stuff. It was like, you know, it was a very three-dimensional fight scene at the end there. And I really enjoyed that.
It felt like a really complicated, like stage set.
Yeah.
Where like they kept using their environment around them and like kept like coming down around cogs, coming up and over and around.
It was very clever.
And when he like, didn't he, it's been a while since I've seen it, but doesn't he finally grab him at the end and be like, oh, you're my bitch now. Or like, I finally can't jump around anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just realized there's another kind of one of those Barry Manilow type scenes in the first one where Hellboy is like kind of stalking or following Liz, and he's outside on the roof, the like
beers.
At a bench with the beers, like talking to a kid. Like they're just like weird monster hanging out, like talking about girl problems. Mm-hmm. Like it's great.
Yeah. And like I say, it's a very human thing to do. Mm-hmm. And you know, it shows you how you can do that in a comic movie. It's like the DC movies. I've always thought were like way too serious. The recent ones, the Snyder movies. You know, it's like you can see to me like that movie, that never happening in a DC movie of like Barry Manilow and like drinking beers. It's like, no, this has to be like, you know, the mother box. Yeah, it has to be grim and like sour.
Yeah, the mother boxes.
Yeah,
Henry Cavill's like, this S stands for hope. I'm like, where's the fucking hope?
Yeah,
Jesus,
you live in the grayest world possible.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like very dishwatery to me. Mm. You know, it was like, let's take this most brightly colored, spangly, you know, American superhero and let's drain all the blue and red out of his outfit.
I mean, I get wanting to have like crazy Dragon Ball Z style fights with other Kryptonians. I'm down for that. Mm-hmm. But can I fucking see it?
Speaking of which, Ron Perlman passed up an offer to be Piccolo in the Dragon Ball movie for this movie.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But I think that's why we didn't get a Hellboy 3 is because
too much shit was
Guillermo del Toro was stretched too thin.
Yeah.
Ron Perlman, great actor, great character actor, is, you know, sought out all over the place, getting snatched up, doing crazy
Beauty and the
different
Beast
roles. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. But I just think that, yeah, del Toro just had too many things he was wanting to do and was like, man, I would love to get back to it. Like, if we even got this a third Hellboy 10 years down the line when Perlman's like almost, what, 75, 80? Mm-hmm. Fuck, I don't know how old he is, but
yeah.
I would fucking watch that. I would be front center at the theater. I'd be down for that.
Well, I mean, it's a weird analogy, but in Star Trek, they had the guy playing Odo. He had to have been like 70 plus, and the makeup worked. You know, you didn't know he was playing an old guy playing a younger guy.
True.
So,
and you had John Hurt as Professor Broom, who came back for voiceover in this.
Yeah.
But even just you were talking about in your review, the exposition at the very beginning, mm-hmm. where it's giving you the back history of the Elfland and the Golden Army, like, just the animation alone was told like fairy tale.
Yeah.
It reminded me of Harry Potter when they're talking about the three brothers that have the...
Deathly Hallows.
The Deathly Hallows, where they kind of stop the movie and kind of show you a little animatic in the background as they're giving you the history.
Yeah.
I really liked it. Yeah. I thought it was great. I mean, I think the first Hellboy has one of the greatest intros ever, where, you know, you're seeing Hellboy come through the gate and all of the allies fighting all the Nazis at the very beginning. It was like, I was on board since then.
Oh, yeah. For sure. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you came with something like that, cook in a little World War II and Nazis, that makes it everything better. Oh, yeah.
You're going to be just fine.
Yeah.
Seth MacFarlane, his crowd was fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
He added a lot to it, I think.
That was a great character, and the way that it was handled was a great character. It's like he was funny, but you know, he fit the storyline for his role as kind of a dick boss. But he had cool powers too, and they handled the special effects cool with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that was well done. And again, it's good storytelling. He's a good character to play off a Hellboy, you know, somebody that's bylaws and sight and rules, and it fits well, and I liked it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I think just overall the environment change shifted in such a way that there was just no appetite for a third Hellboy from the studios, so that by the time they actually got like traction with the actors, the cast, the director, you know, the audience, it just wasn't there. What was going to happen?
And who is his, I can't remember the actor's name, his boss that also likes the cigars.
Oh, Jeffrey Tambor?
Yeah. Jeffrey Tambor, yes. There's just not a shitty actor.
I love how like he's so like hand wringy when he's, you know, I always think of Arrested Development.
Mm-hmm. That's all I can think of.
Yeah.
All I can think about.
It's like, you know, he's up in the attic somewhere watching down the whole time.
Yeah.
There's always money in the banana stand, Michael.
Yeah.
In fact, like the only actor in the Hellboy movies that didn't really do it for me was the, in the first Hellboy, the introduction into the BRPD. That guy that was, you know, maybe a Liz love interest. He was supposed to be our glimpse into that. Like, you know, he
got recast, didn't he? Or not recast, but like cut out.
Yeah, he got cut out of two, which is fine.
Like, yeah, it's fine.
They didn't need
great
it anymore.
Dude, but no. You know, he had served his purpose in the first one, being in the lens of the audience.
Yeah. So hypothetical, if Guillermo del Toro said, "I'm going to do it," but with David Harbour as Hellboy.
Well, hard sell.
Yeah. Mm.
I don't think he would. I mean, yeah. I don't even know the reception of the 2019 film, because I still haven't seen it. But I would imagine they probably wouldn't want to be done that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I probably want to do his own thing. So. Yeah.
Mila Jovovich was great as the villain in that. I mean, I thought that was a great idea, but, you know, we needed Del Toro to.
You need the maestro. I mean, it's like with Indiana Jones and Spielberg, or, you know, honestly, I hate to say it, but Star Wars and George Lucas, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and yeah, we can't let this go by without, you know, big ups to Mike Mignola, who did the comic.
Yeah.
Mignola.
Yeah, either way.
Say it again.
Mignola.
He's Italian, probably.
Say it louder. Mignola.
Yeah, and that's which publishing house is that? Dark Horse?
Dark Horse, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So they made a lot of money off
these movies. Oh, and they had Baba Yaga. Well, no, Baba Yaga was in the David Harbour one.
Mm-hmm. And John Wick.
John Wick.
So it's been another episode of Cinema Vino, and we thank you guys very much.
Yeah.
Mucho apreciado.
Taylor, Travis, and Sean.
Hey. Mooch. Hey.
Thank y'all.
Glad to be back.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
It's good to have you. You were Easter Island statues?
Yep. Yeah. I was building another head.
That's great.
Yep.
Yeah. And out of sand, which is the most impressive thing.
Yes.
Yep.
You know, until the big wave came and, you know, took it out.
Well, you know, it's a project for a reason.
Yeah.
Yeah. He brought back a nose. That's supposed to stay there.
Yeah.
I don't know if you knew that.
There weren't any signs, so.
No, you know, nobody knows, so.
Hello.
I don't have that button anymore.
No.
But anyway, what was it? Out Like a Lion, In With a Bang?
How did it? Not... Not with a bang, but with a whimper.
Exactly. But yeah, we thank you guys so much. And we'll see you next time for Ghostbusters 2.
Stay tuned.
To learn more about CinemaVino, check out our website at cinemavino.net. You can also listen, rate, subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you choose to listen to your podcasts. My movie reviews are available at toddwoffordmovies.com.